Not to get too sentimental, but at Les Schwab Tires, we think there's nothing more beautiful than the changing of the seasons. Except, of course, the seasonal changing of the tires. So if the weather takes a turn, and you find yourself in need of some all-season tires, well, you ought to know Les Schwab's having one of our biggest sales of the year. Head our way before the weather does, and we'll make sure you're good to go. Les Schwab Tires. Doing the right thing matters.
And welcome to In the Studio with Lenis here on the Essence of Success Radio Network. We have a special guest tonight, Mr. Harry Pisanis, and it's such a treat. We are so honored to have Mr. Harry Pisanis as our special guest in a series of programs related to the human psyche, and the human conditions. Harry is the author of two recent books, which you can purchase now on the website. Don't go over there yet. Stay here and listen to the show. You can go over after the show. That's at Harry Pisanis at RockyBalboaHP.com. The books are The Truth is a Lie, and I'm telling you, I'm reading it now. Excuse me. And his second book is The Logical Path to Life. Harry is also a fitness guru, which he will explain eating and exercising to good health. And you got to hear it. I really like the way he talks about eating food and to exercise and continue it where you're not under pressure or stress every morning at 9 o'clock getting on the bicycle, you know. So we'll get a chance to discuss that too. He also has an apparel line. If you would like to contact Harry, go to www.mindsetonline.com. Harry will be with us twice a month, the second and fourth Wednesday of the month. Now, every Saturday, the show will be repeated at 2 p.m. Pacific time. So adjust your time from, this is the West Coast, so you need to adjust your time on the East Coast, so it would probably be about, 5 p.m. on the East Coast. So anyway, every Saturday, if you miss the show on Wednesday night, which is the live show, you can listen to it on Saturday at 2 p.m. here on the Essence of Success Radio Network. Thank you for listening and supporting the show. You're in for a wonderful awakening. If nothing else, you will look at a particular narrative with a different perspective. Now, as I said, to contact Harry, Facebook is Rocky Balboa HP on Facebook. Twitter, he is Harry Pisanis at Rocky Balboa HP on Twitter. So either way, you'll be able to get him. But I'm telling you, y'all, I don't want you to leave the show, but his book is just that good, so The Truth is a Lie. So I'm just saying, after the show, go buy the book. I'm telling you, you'll be glad you did. If nothing else, it will wake you up to how life really is and how we look at it. Okay, well, without further ado, oh, and the chat room is open. Let me welcome people from around the world. Welcome Philippines, Australia. Welcome Dubai. Welcome England and France. And, of course, our kissing cousins in Canada. Welcome all. And the chat room is open, and also the phone lines are open. So just remember, when you call in to ask questions, or if you just want to, you know, talk about something with Harry, be sure and push 1 to get you in the queue. In the chat room, your moderator is Sheha, and I believe the station manager, Nina, is going to be in there, too, to assist with questions to let me know, you know, to bring Harry over there. So, okay, without further ado, let's bring in Mr. Harry Pisanis.
Lennis, how are you?
Welcome, Harry. I'm just doing terrific. And yourself?
Doing great, thanks.
All right.
And thanks for the great introduction.
Oh, you're always well. Hey, that's you, bro. I have to give you your kudos, okay? That's you. Very good. Before we get started, do you want to tell people? I mean, I said, you know, some stuff about you, but you want to tell a little bit about you and your philosophy, how you came into, you know, writing your books.
Yeah, I owned health clubs for years after I graduated college, and I spent as much time either talking or counseling my members as I did training them. And the books came about simply because through the years I've had a lot of people tell me, you should write a book, or the way that you look at things could help a lot of people. So it really just came from that, of being prompted by other people. And then as I got older and realized, you know, you can only be in the health and fitness industry for so long, I said this is a good time to transition to writing and to doing something that I really love, which is looking at things from a different perspective and getting people to open their minds and allowing them to start, for lack of a better term, thinking for themselves. Because so many people want to coach people, or they want to enforce upon people the way they think. And I really feel the only way you can help someone is to just get them to help themselves. And the best way to do that is to get them to look at things from a different perspective. Because if things aren't working for you and aren't working for a certain reason, there's probably a simple solution to that. They're not working because of the way you're looking at things. So if you can change that, you have a really good chance of changing the outcome.
Beautiful. And the first thing I want to touch on is eating and exercise, and I'll tell you why. We're coming into Thanksgiving, to the holiday here shortly, and I love what, well, let me just let you do it, but I love your method and precision about doing that. So can you speak a little bit about eating and exercising, please, for good health?
Sure. It's no different than changing the way you think. How you eat and how you exercise is just based on your mentality. And everything comes down to a simple choice. And the holidays are designed for people to do the wrong things but have a built-in excuse. But the holidays are no different than anything else. If you want to get in shape and you want to eat well, then it just starts with the way you think and prioritizing feeling good and eating good over eating poorly and doing something just because society or holidays condition you to believe that it's okay, because it's not. And
no.
So it just simply comes down to a choice. Working out or fitness is no different than anything in life. It's just what you prioritize, what you really want to do versus what you've been taught and conditioned to do.
Well, I want you to explain about the exercising. Remember, because the program, when we discussed this back up in the summer, I like the way that you set that up where you're not just every morning at 9 o'clock, you know, you need to get to the gym. you know, which goes back to what you say mentally, how you think about your health and eating. So could you expunge on that a little bit?
Sure. Every day when you get up to either work out or eat, it's irrelevant what you've done the day before. So what you've done yesterday when it comes to fitness, when it comes to eating, or when it comes to the choices you're going to make, what you've done yesterday, either good or bad, does not roll over to what you do today. And that's one of the hardest things for people to understand. People think when they look at fitness, well, if I did something great yesterday, then I can do something poorly today. When the reality is the body doesn't remember what you've done. It only remembers what you're doing. So when you wake up every day, it's literally Groundhog Day. You have to start from square one, and you have to look at that like, today, what I'm going to do will determine what I'm going to do tomorrow. But what I've done yesterday has no bearing on what I'm doing today. Workouts and fitness and eating doesn't roll over. It's no different than a job or money. If you worked yesterday, then you get paid for yesterday. But if you work yesterday, that doesn't pay you for today. It's the same way with your body and your health. So every day you have to put in to get back. And that's the hardest thing for people, because when people start looking at fitness and health big picture, it becomes overwhelming. No one wants to think, well, I've got to work out every day the rest of my life, or I've got to eat great the rest of my life, because then you start looking at it in a 1, 5, 10, 20, 30-year picture. You just have to look at it a day at a time, do things right today, do things right tomorrow, do things right the next day, and then those days start mounting up. So when you take a look at it from that perspective, it's not so overwhelming.
Okay. Now, do you believe in working out 7 days a week or 5 days?
I think the body is conditioned and trained to work out every day, 7 days a week. You just can't work the same body parts every day. The body grows from recovery. So when you work out, you are breaking down muscles, you are breaking down muscle tissue, and how they rebuild is through recovery. So you can work out every single day, but you have to do it segmented by different body parts each day. So while you're working one body part one day, other body parts that you've worked the last few days get a chance to rest and recover.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, Harry, for that, because I'm sure that helps a lot of people that they think they have to do a, you know, a routine and exercise and or binge, you know, like, oh, yeah, I did an hour today workout, you know, and tomorrow they might do a half an hour, but it's got to be consistent what you're doing and
well,
not
also,
harming your body
people,
in the meantime.
Well, also, Lennis, a lot of people work out so they can do the wrong thing, meaning a lot of people will work out really hard, and then that becomes their excuse to eat poorly the rest of the day. Or they feel it's a trade-off. Well, if I eat, you know, great yesterday, I can eat poorly today. Or if I work out hard this morning, then I can have something I want to eat. But it's not designed that way. It's not a balance sheet. You can't do one good thing and then balance it off with one poor thing. You just have to keep building like bricks, one good thing on top of one good thing, on top of one good thing, and then that's how you make progress. But that a lot of times goes against human nature, because we're self-destructive a lot of times at our core.
Agree. All right, well, now I've got some questions, and also people, folks in the chat room, I saw, welcome to the show. If you have questions for Harry, just I'll come in periodically and see. Okay, I want to talk about, I'm on page 15 of your book where it says, lessons learned, all that is required to have a change narrative accepted is power, money, and time.
Yes.
Now, my question is, what do you feel about ego, fear, and guilt? Begin with ego.
A lot of times ego is the byproduct of insecurity. And over time, I'll give you an example. When we grow up, we are faced with a lot of ego, the ego of our parents, the ego of our teachers, and the ego of people that are in control of us. And growing up, we're really suppressed and under the thumb of a lot of people with really big egos, which is really manifested from their insecurity. Growing up, you don't have many options. You know, when you're a kid, you can't afford anything. You can't live on your own. So you don't have the ability to fight back in any way. And the people that are in control of us, they understand that better than anyone. And so what they do a lot of times to suppress us is have their egos or insecurity dominate us. And so right away, we are conditioned and taught the only way to fit in or to get along with someone is to conform to the way that they think, which is really dangerous for us, but very convenient for them.
Touché.
And this is really common. I always tell people, go back to when you were a kid and think of all the times your parents or teachers criticized you, said something negative towards you or about you. We would always take it personally. But then as you grow up, you start realizing what we took as criticism when we were younger, because of the way people talked to us, it wasn't based on who we are or who we were. It was based on the difficulty we were causing them. When I think back to when I was a kid, all the times my parents critiqued me or criticized me, it's because I wasn't doing things the way they wanted them done. So right away, they attack and they criticize, knowing that I'll take it personally and that I'll change my behavior to make their lives easier and more convenient. And then you can flip that around. A lot of times when we're a kid and people praise us or say words that reflect well on us, we take it positively. But then you start realizing they weren't really complimenting me or praising me. The only times they said good things about me or said things that I took as praise is when I was doing things the way they wanted them to be done. Well, that's really dangerous, because then you start acting in the way that people want you to act and start acting in a way you know will get them to praise you. But they're not praising us. They're praising the fact that we're doing things the way they want them done. Where people, when we're young, should praise us for being who we are, not for acting in a way that makes their lives easier. There's a huge difference.
You are so correct for the benefit of the parents. You're so correct about that. Okay, let's talk a little bit about fear. There's a cliche that says fear, you only, what is it? You only fear is fear itself, or something like that.
The only thing you fear is fear itself. I think a lot of times the biggest fear we have is of not belonging or not being approved of. And that's something that's conditioned into us in childhood as well. Because from the earliest age, we're taught to get along. We're taught to be part of something, be part of a group, be part of a team, to be part of a family, to be part of something. And the minute you either feel you're not part of something, or the minute society perceives that you're not part of something, you're viewed as an outcast. And then you're considered to be odd or strange or different or weird. When the truth is, we shouldn't be forced or conditioned or brainwashed into believing that being part of something makes us a better person. What really makes us who we are is being unique, being an individual, being different. And instead of those things being shunned or looked down upon, they should be embraced, but they aren't. And so you immediately get this fear that's ingrained in you by the people that want you to be part of something. But the reason they want you to be part of something isn't for your benefit, it's for theirs, because if they can get you to conform and be part of a group and to be part of something, then right away you've just made their job easier. And if you make their job easier, then you definitely are going to make their life easier. So conformity is something that we're all forced into at the earliest of ages, and then we are taught that if we're not part of something, then something's wrong with us, and then we become so fearful of being called odd or strange or different that we start conforming just to avoid the fear of being different.
Do you think that for some children that they equate fear from their parents about certain things?
Yeah, I don't think they equate fear from their parents. I think a lot of times their parents condition them to be afraid. I mean, how many times when a kid's at home is he told or she told, keep it down, or be quiet, or don't say that, or, you know, your dad's working right now. So right away, so many kids look at their home environment as almost like a prison. It's very confining. And you're forced to either not speak, or you're told when to speak. You're told when to eat. You're told how to act. You're told what to say. You're told what not to say. You're told when to say it. You're told when not to say it. And that right away really ingrains a huge level of fear in you, because when you're at home, you should be your most comfortable. You should be able to relax, be who you are, and you should be around people that accept you more than any other place on the planet. In reality, a lot of times when we're at home, we're walking on eggshells because we're so scared of acting out in a way that will get admonishment from someone else, that fear from that point really follows so many people into adulthood. I mean, there are so many kids, whether this is when I was growing up, and it's not unique to me, a lot of times in the morning, the minute I would get on the school bus or I would leave my house, I could take a deep sigh, because now I'm not under someone's thumb. I'm not afraid. I can just be me.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think one of the words that kids hear the most when they're growing up is don't. Don't do this. Don't say that. you know, don't go here. Don't, you know, embarrass me. And so you start hearing that, but you're not hearing don't. What you're hearing is they don't approve of me and something's wrong with me. You don't realize till you get older that they were telling you those things because they're trying to control you. So whenever you go somewhere, you're making their job easier. It's always amazing as kids, we're always told, well, this is what your dad thinks, or this is what, and we are taught as kids to understand the way adults think and what they want. But rarely do adults understand kids the way kids think and what kids want. So right away, we are forced to learn their behaviors, and the minute our behaviors don't align with theirs, then there are repercussions for the fact our behaviors do not align.
Yeah, that's true. That's true, because I notice how children, when they grow up, they have a fear of their parents. And I'm like, why do you fear your parents? You should just love them and enjoy them. But like you say, you're conditioned to this don't thing, and so you have this fear. I know you probably heard it, too, and you grow up like, oh, man, my mom will get pissed off at me, or my dad will be mad. But like you say, it's to make them feel good. That's not you.
Well, and what's sad is when you look back a lot of times on your childhood, the times your parents were most pissed at you, like you said, were the times when you were really being you.
True
it
that.
Seemed like the only, it seems like the only time our parents approved of us is when our behavior was just the opposite of who we really were. So a lot of times, the only time you get approval from your parents is when you act in a way that's contradicting who you really are. When we grow up, the first thing our parents tell us is don't lie. That's the first thing my dad taught me, don't lie. He used to say, Harry, if you lie, you're really going to get it. But he would say, just tell the truth. As long as you don't lie, you won't get in trouble. But then I started realizing every time I did tell the truth is when I got in the most trouble, because my truth wasn't their truth. So right away, he's telling me don't lie. But he's punishing, or yeah, he's telling me not to lie, but he's punishing me every time I'm telling the truth. Well, kids aren't stupid. We may be small, but we're not dumb. So the last thing a kid wants to do is be punished all the time. So you learn to tell your parents what they want to hear, and you learn to lie because they tell you don't lie. But a lot of times they punish you for telling the truth. So you learn very quickly, if I lie to them and tell them what they want to hear, I'll avoid being punished. And a lot of times as a child, you don't start gravitating to enjoyment or pleasure. You just start avoiding punishment and pain. And the best way to do that is to live the life they want you to live, which a lot of times is just the opposite of the life you want to live. Now, that's really psychologically screwed up. But as kids, you don't have options. You have zero options. You have no money. You can't provide for yourself. You can't buy groceries. You can't do anything. So you are solely dependent on your parents for everything. And they know that. And they use that and hold it over your head. Even if it's not consciously, subconsciously, they reward you when you fall into line and they punish you when you don't. And so you don't start gravitating towards pleasure. You just start running from pain.
It's Well, tell me this, Harry. How do you think that people should deal with guilt?
Well, I think as adults, we should eliminate. People make us or try to make us feel guilty, usually for one reason. We're not giving them what they want. Well, that's not our job, even though as kids we believe it's our job. You know, even in school, think back to when you were in school, you had the term teacher's pet. The teacher always gravitated to the student that made their job easier, not the students that they liked. They ended up liking the students that made their job easier. And the minute you didn't, you're punished. So you're made to feel guilty. Hell, Lennis, when I was in elementary school, I spent more time sitting in the hall than I did in class, because every time I did something the teacher didn't like or I made a joke, it's Harry, go sit in the hall. Well, then you're sitting out there when all the other classes change. They see you sitting in the middle of the hall. They know you're being punished. So what they wanted to do is make me feel guilty for making jokes, trying to be funny. They were making me feel guilty for just being me. Instead of saying, man, Harry's really funny. Harry's got a talent. Maybe we should take that talent and try to enhance it. They didn't want to enhance my talent because it made their job more difficult. So what they tried to do is suppress it, and they do that by making you feel guilty. But as I grew up, I realized I'm not going to change who I am or the way I think to make someone feel good if it's not really who I am. And if they try to make me feel guilty, then that's not my problem. That's their problem. But the majority of people try to make you feel guilty when you're not giving them what they want. And that's not any person's job in society. Our job is just to be who we are. And then people should either accept us for that or they don't, but a lot of times they don't do either. They instead try to make us feel guilty, so then we'll start conforming and becoming the person they want us to be, not the person either we want to be or we were meant to be. There's a huge difference. And so that's why so many people in society, especially adults, don't really know who they are, because at the earliest age when they tried to show who they are or who they were punished for it. And so then when you're punished for something over and over, you start to remove yourself from that behavior and start gravitating to the behavior that someone wants you to align with. But then you really start losing who you are to the point where now the majority of people have no idea who they are.
No, and I believe fear and guilt, that's a strong driving force in the human makeup. I don't know why, but it is. That fear, if we could get rid of fear and guilt and ego, because I don't like ego either, but the fear and guilt, even in relationships, whether it's a man and a woman or your relationship with your job or your friends and family, that fear and guilt is going to come up.
It's in every avenue in life. Look at church. You know, when you go to church, they're passing around the collection plate. They do it in full view of every other parishioner. Why do they do that? Because they're trying to guilt you into giving your money. And they do it through peer pressure. They know you're not going to want to look cheap to the other parishioners, and a lot of them are your friends, your neighbors, people you interact with on a daily basis. So they have you do it knowing you're going to feel guilty if you don't give. You don't want to appear to be cheap. You don't want to appear to be someone who isn't part of the group. So guilt and peer pressure exists in every business and almost in every relationship. So we start telling people what they want to hear, how they want to hear it, and when they want to hear it, just to avoid the guilt trip they're going to lay on us if we don't tell them what they want to hear when they want to hear it.
Yeah, I agree. That fear and guilt is a mofo for a lot of people. Okay. You were just, oh, I know something I wanted us to discuss, or you, to talk about was motive. I really enjoyed that chapter. By the way, y'all, that's chapter 5. Yes, I'm reading his book. But anyway, motive, because that was really good. Can you touch on that a little bit? Not to give away
Sure.
too much in the book.
No, that's okay. A lot of times, I wrote this in the book, when you watch a movie that's based on a courtroom drama, they're always spending the majority of that movie trying to understand or figure out what the motive is or was of the person that's allegedly accused of a crime. But in society, we rarely do that. We just look at someone's behavior, what they're doing, when they're doing it, how they're doing it, but we never spend any time trying to ascertain their motive. We're never looking beyond the surface. One question that we always ask is what? What happened? But a lot of times we don't ask why. Whenever someone does something, I try to ask myself, why are they doing it? What's behind it? What's their motive? And if you can ascertain someone's motive, then you can determine the level of punishment that you're going to give them. You know, and that really is how the court system works. They punish people, for lack of a better term, based on the intent or the motive of the individual who commits the crime. We never do that in society. We don't look at someone's motive, the reason they're doing something. We just look at what they're doing. But a lot of times, people can be doing what they believe to be the right thing and have the wrong outcome. So if we're just punishing people based on outcomes, then what we're doing is conditioning people to never do anything, because people don't want to be punished. If someone tries to do something and has a good or a great intent, but it doesn't work out well, we shouldn't punish them. We should look at the motive. Okay, they tried to do the right thing. They tried to do a good thing. It just didn't work. But in society, we don't care about people's motive. All we care about is the outcome. Did we get what we want? Did they do what we wanted them to do? Did they say what we wanted them to say? Did they give us what we wanted them to give us? And as long as people give us what we want, we don't care about what their motive is, even if their motive comes from a really bad place. As long as we benefit from the outcome, that's all we really care about. And so now you've got everyone in society, everyone's out there doing whatever they've got to do to get the result they want to get, regardless of the intent and the damage it's doing to anyone else in getting it.
Okay. How do you feel about going to the human psyche? Behavior in the person. Sometimes you like the behavior, but you don't like the person, or you like the person, but you don't like their behavior. How do you feel about that?
I think it's hard for most people to separate the two. Meaning, we like people when we like how their behavior benefits us. And we dislike people when their behavior doesn't benefit us. It's amazing when people call you rude or a jerk or arrogant or insensitive or uncaring or unfeeling. Those words immediately follow when you're not giving someone what they want. But then flip it around. When people say you're a great person or I think you're wonderful or I love you, those words are always following an action that's giving someone what they want. Well, the two things have nothing to do with each other. I can rob a bank and give you $5,000. That doesn't make me a great guy because I gave you money. But I can come over, give you 50 cents, which is everything in my pocket, and that shouldn't cause you to call me cheap. It's all I've got. But we start attributing positive characteristics and we attribute positive adjectives to people when their behavior benefits us. How many times has someone told you they love you right after you've done something for them? Well, that shouldn't cause people to love you. That has nothing to do with who you are. That has to do with what you've done for them. And just the opposite. How many times has someone said, oh, I can't stand you or I hate you, the minute you don't do something for them? Well, that doesn't make you a bad person that you're not doing things for someone. And it doesn't make you a great person when you are doing things for someone. But most people can't compartmentalize and they can't separate the two. They really can't. People judge us based on our behavior and how that behavior benefits them or how it's detrimental to them. So then we all want to be accepted and to be approved of. So we realize at an early age the best way for someone to say something positive about us is to do something that benefits them. So then we start doing things that people want us to do just so they can praise us. That's really screwed up.
Okay, now what do you think? Go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, please, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, because Harry, now I'm the kind of person, I always tell people I love them, and I mean that from my heart, but I don't expect anything from you. I just, you know, I love you because of who you are. So it's not really benefiting me. You know what I'm saying? It's just, I'm that kind of person, and I'm just lovable. So, you know, whether I'm on the phone or if somebody stops by, I'll still tell them, you know, before they leave, hey, I love you, you know, wish you the best. And I sincerely mean that.
Well, number one, you need to take a rocket ship to Mars because you're one in a million. That's a great quality. But, man, it's really rare. I mean, and you want to make it about you. I think that's a great thing. Go back to your childhood and really think for a minute. I mean, really think about this. How many times did your parents or people that were older than you or close to you, how many times did they tell you they love you or Lennis, you're great, or, you know, Lennis, you're wonderful? How many times did that immediately follow you doing something that benefited them? And then think how many times your parents were mad at you and said something that hurt you that immediately followed you doing something that didn't benefit them. You know, I got a good report card, which rarely happened, but if I had a good one, I would come home and my parents would reward me or say, oh, Harry, you're great, or great job, or, you know, Harry, you know, you're wonderful. I'm not wonderful because I got a good grade. That doesn't make me wonderful. Just like if I come home and I get a bad grade, I immediately get punished. Well, why would you punish me for getting a bad grade? Maybe I studied as hard as I could, but I'm not,
yep.
I don't have an aptitude. You know, a good example, I was terrible in math and science, but great in English and history because I'm extremely creative, but I have horrific math skills. Well, if I came home and had a report card that had a C or a D in math, my parents would punish me. And I would think to myself, you know, you've never spent 5 minutes helping me with my math, but you punish me for 5 hours. Well, maybe I'm just bad at math. Maybe I need help. It's not because I'm lazy or I didn't try. I'm just not good at it. But the immediate response was to punish me. But then I realized I was being punished because they took my grades personally. And when I got a poor grade, they were upset because it reflected poorly on them. But it doesn't mean I didn't try hard, or it doesn't mean I didn't give my best effort. Maybe it means I need some help. But if they help me, that would require time on their part and an investment of time and effort. It's easy just to send me to my room and punish me because then they don't have to spend any time. That just takes 5 seconds to say, go to your room. So I think you're rare. Most people equate their feelings to someone or about someone solely based on your behavior benefiting them. And we shouldn't be judged either poorly or we shouldn't be judged positively based on how our behavior benefits someone. We should be judged on who we are, but we aren't.
No, not always. You're right. I want to touch on one more thing. We've got about 14 minutes left. Please
sure.
talk to everybody about selfishness. My God.
Number one, it's probably the most misinterpreted word that's ever been created. We're all selfish. Every single person is selfish. And no one ever minds us being selfish as long as our selfishness benefits them. Then it's okay. Now, the minute our selfishness doesn't benefit them and it contradicts how they want us to be or who they want us to be, then the attack starts. I mean, I've been told, I guarantee you, I think by the time I was 12 years old, I was probably 12 or 13 before I realized my name was Harry. Because up until that point, I thought it was selfish because it wasn't. It was just selfish this, selfish that, selfish. But then I started realizing every time they called me selfish, anyone called me selfish, it was because I was making their life more difficult and I wasn't conforming in the way they wanted me to. So that's when people call you selfish. It almost always coincides with your behavior not aligning with theirs or with your behavior making their life more difficult. We're all selfish. Mother Teresa is considered one of the world's most unselfish people. She said the only thing that made her feel good was helping other people.
Yeah.
So she was saying, even though I do great things for other people, I do it because it makes me feel good. That's selfish. We all are. You know, take an entertainer. Take someone, you know, say you love going to the movies and you see an actor that you really admire. Well, they're selfish. They chose to do something they want to do and live their life they want to live it. But by doing that, they're entertaining millions of people. So what I always tell people is the minute that someone calls you selfish, self-centered, any term that society would consider derogatory, it probably means you're doing something right. But they're trying to label you, and they're trying to make you feel guilty so they can start to modify and change your behavior in a way that will benefit them and not you. When you have two people that disagree on something or want something done a certain way, they're both looking at it selfishly. But what one person is doing is expecting you to compromise or to give in and relinquish your selfishness so their selfishness can now take the lead. And so you get into this battle of wills and ego. People love when you conform. And when you don't, you're immediately considered or called selfish. When the truth is, a lot of times all selfishness is just being who we are.
To thine own self be true. Thank you.
Yes. No, it really is that simple. It really is that simple. The problem is when your selfishness collides with someone else's, they immediately expect you to acquiesce and cave in so then they can take the lead. And the minute you don't, that's when the term gets applied to you. And so I always just tell people, just be who you are. Don't feel the need to conform to anyone else to make them feel better about you, because it's not going to make them feel better about you, and it sure as hell not going to make you feel better about yourself.
No, but selfishness does prevail, though. I guess I'm trying to look at where selfishness would be in a good way of helping someone or doing things compared to it being a negative.
Well, I think there's a million examples. I'll give you a few. Look throughout history. Look at Martin Luther King. Perfect example. He reached and touched millions of people. His message, you know, resonated throughout the world. But he was extremely selfish. Why did he convey that message? Why did he try to spread that message? Because it made him feel good. He did it because it's what he believed in. He was being selfish. But that selfishness, once he got it out into the world, changed millions of lives. Look at JFK. He believed in civil rights. He believed in equality. So he was very selfish in the fact of he had his beliefs and he wanted the world to know his beliefs, and he conveyed it to the world. Same with Lincoln. He wanted to end slavery. He was very selfish. He knew the way he wanted human beings to be. And so he said, I'm going to abolish slavery because it's wrong, and I believe that every person should be equal. So all these people were selfish. They had an agenda. They had a certain way of thinking. They had a certain way of looking at the world. And they came from a very selfish perspective of this is how things should be done. They believed what they believed, and they weren't going to be deterred. Now, there's a lot of admiration for those people because they had their beliefs. They were very selfish and focused, and they had their agenda. But it also tells you why so many people in the world conform today and they're afraid to speak their mind. Because what was the end result of all three of those selfish men who tried to change the world? They were assassinated.
Yes, sir.
Every one of them. So we've become a society where we're afraid to say what we think, say what we feel, and act in a way that's truly, and I mean truly reflective of who we are. Because when we do, we get punished. We lose jobs. We lose family members. We lose income. We lose our houses. I mean, if you take so many examples in today's society of people that try to speak their mind, look at social media. It's a great thing because we're able to connect with people all over the world. That's an amazing thing. But at the same time, now because of social media, the minute anyone ever expresses an original thought or something that's truly reflective of who they are, man, they are immediately punished. I mean, if anyone goes into their job today and says anything that's reflective of who they are and it's not aligned with the principles of the people they work with, you're out of a job. Then you can't pay your mortgage, you can't feed your family. So we become a society that falls into line and says what everyone wants to hear, because the minute we say something that's truly reflective of who we are, we're punished for it. And I don't mean just punished by people saying things about us. We now lose jobs, we lose incomes. There are severe repercussions and consequences for being an individual in today's society. You know, where in the past, speaking your mind and being true to who you are was a little more acceptable than it is now. So what I try to
Well, look
to
at
teach
your president.
People,
you think he's selfish?
Yeah. Everyone's selfish. To aspire to be president of the United States is about ego and wanting to elevate yourself to a position of power. It's not about public service, because if it was about public service, you could be a local congressman, you could be a mayor, or you could just help people in your community. If you're aspiring to that type of position, you crave the power and the ego just as much, if not more, than the benefit of helping other people. So, we all are selfish, we all have egos, and we all have something to say. The problem is society, starting from our parents and teachers all the way up, punish us for that. And so we end up all growing up conforming, because the punishment for being an individual and speaking your mind and being true to who you are is so severe that people don't want to deal with the repercussions.
Yep, that's true. Harry, we're coming down to the close of the show, and could you tell people again about your two books and where your websites, I mean, I said at the beginning, but, you know.
Sure.
Let them know if you get in touch
website,
with you. And
the website is simple. It's Mindsets, MindSets, .online. Mindsets.online. And the two books that I have are called The Truth is a Lie and The Logical Path to Life. And what both books do is get you to take the way you've been trained and taught to think. I look at it like hardwiring in a computer. Before you can rewire a computer and wire it properly, you have to rip out the hardwiring that's in it first. What these books are conditioned to do is get you to look at the way you were raised and the way people taught you, and to rip out that hardwiring and replace it with the hardwiring that you want to implement moving forward.
Right. And how can they reach you on Facebook and Twitter?
Twitter is simple. It's at Rocky Balboa HP. And Twitter is the same thing, twitter.com/Rocky Balboa HP.
Okay. I want to say thank you so much. You've been listening to In the Studio with our special guest, Harry Pisanis. I thank the people in the chat room. I appreciate y'all and the people that came in on the phone. Now, tune back in. Harry will be back on November the 14th, the 2nd and 4th Sunday. And also, you can hear the show for anybody.
Point out the colors of you, I see them too, and boy, I like them, I like them, I like them. We're way too fly to partake in all this hate. We out here vibing, we vibing, we vibing.
Alexa, play Ariana Grande.
Okay.
With Amazon Music, a voice is all you need. Get tens of millions of songs. Download the Amazon Music app today.
Not to get too sentimental, but at Les Schwab Tires, we think there's nothing more beautiful than the changing of the seasons. Except, of course, the seasonal changing of the tires. So if the weather takes a turn, and you find yourself in need of some all-season tires, well, you ought to know Les Schwab's having one of our biggest sales of the year. Head our way before the weather does, and we'll make sure you're good to go. Les Schwab Tires. Doing the right thing matters.